So I'm very pleased to introduce the person who's going to be playing Matt Richards in this case, and it's Larry Siff. Larry is the Chief Executive Officer of Neptune Advisors. It's a consulting firm that focuses on strategically positioning middle market companies for accelerated growth. Larry is the founder of the annual Pathways to Platinum Conference. It's designed for CEOs to share best practices in management and oversight. Larry is a member of the National Association of Corporate Directors. He's a board leadership fellow. He currently serves on the board of directors of Jones and Vining and Mason Companies. He's an industry advisor for Silverwood Partners, which is a boutique investment bank. Larry's a trustee of the Museum of Science. He's on the executive committee. He's chairman of the Asian American Chamber of Commerce. He's a founder of the Private Director Association of New England, director of the New England Business Association, and a member of the Massachusetts Senate Business Advisory Council. He's a director of the 210 International Foundation and the Windsor School. Larry is past chairman of the Brimmer and May School and a past director of the Association for Corporate Growth. Prior to Neptune Advisors, Larry was principal and managing director of Gordon Brothers, a $50 billion investment and transaction advisory service. At Gordon Brothers, Larry founded the consumer products and branding business, which grew to become two of the firm's largest divisions. As director of its strategic acquisitions, he led the acquisitions ranging from $5 million to $1.2 billion. Larry served on the executive committee and was an advisor to GBMP, an equity and debt fund. Larry was president and CEO of Baby Stripes, that's an online retailer of luxury baby gifts, and the president and CEO of Cherry Tree Products, a manufacturer and wholesaler and retailer of high-end children's clothing. Larry graduated magna cum laude from Brown University and the executive program at Dartmouth's Amos Tuck Business School. So, without further ado, Larry.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'm really impressed. Labor Day weekend, we got this place showing, so. So I am Matt Richards. Everyone's read the case now. So what would you advise me?
But you've taken the role. You've been elected and
Correct.
You've taken it, which is the cart before the horse now.
Correct.
We see. So I think that there has to be a sit down.
Okay.
With the CEO and perhaps with the other executives, the other family members, to revisit the expectations, their view of what they need in a new board, their view of the strengths and weaknesses that have been there, their idea of how you and future directors will be involved. There's got to be a conversation.
Was there anything I should have done differently?
Had that conversation.
Up front, in advance?
Yes, validate the objectives, basically. What are the goals? Mm-hmm. Why do they look for an external board members and try to conquer that with what you believe is to be a board member role or duty?
What are the family members? They're the ones that originated the idea, right?
Right, correct. They had an executive committee meeting, right. And they decided in the EC, this is a real case, they decided in the EC meeting on the Monday morning, we need to professionalize our board. We don't have a professional board. We got 7 board members before the local community, a lot of retired people from the local community, but we need to start to recruit the best people from around the country.
And how do you get a sense of how they interact or how well they get along or anything like that?
In terms of the family members?
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting question. So they are working together, if that's what you're asking.
They're
correct. So some get along better than others in terms of that, in terms of their relationship, but they are working together. They're talking, they're working together.
What I'm detecting.
Well, to this point, what is the likelihood that the other family members view a fully independent board as a vehicle of leverage to change the CEO? You're just focusing on your relationship with the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
I think his point broadening is clearly called for. But you don't agree.
Well, I'm going to take that a little farther. Meaning that should the family member who's the CEO shouldn't be the CEO?
Yeah, maybe your real role there is to be the camel's nose under the tent to shed more daylight on other behaviors of the CEO, like showing board members the financials on a slide screen and then sending them on their way, et cetera. Maybe he does the same thing with the operating management of the business, and they don't agree with what he's been doing.
So, meaning my role as coming on the board should be to educate the CEO in terms of what the management practices should be in the relationship with the board.
Okay, well.
Right or not?
I guess that is a polite way of putting it.
I've run a billion-one company, right? So I came on, I've done that, I sat on other boards. I mean, I'm on a current board right now, but I'd sat on other outside boards besides my own in the past. I took this on because I knew the industry. The head of the industry association called me and said, this is a great opportunity. They really want to professionalize. I'm like, great, I know the company, and that's why I felt very familiar coming into it.
Well, maybe the other side of the coin is, if you're an operating officer of a family company, and you and your peers were wondering how you change the CEO of a private company, maybe the answer is Matt.
Okay, good thought.
So actually, the way this case is written, it doesn't necessarily have to be a family company. This applied, this disconnect would apply to about any organization, mm-hmm. any type of board. And you haven't, just the opposite of that, you haven't shown a lot of stress, at least to my quick read, between the family members. So this issue of poor due diligence up front, I think, not going the cautious route, which might be the observer route, would apply to any organization.
Do you think that I should have interviewed some of the other existing board members before I took it on?
I think that you would even entertain it without going.
And the other family members.
Yeah.
Person didn't.
but I think you like the challenge, so whether he did or not, now he's in it, he wants to make it better.
Right.
And when I read between the lines, it's a personal appreciation I have. I think we have here what we call artificial harmony, which is basically relates to the five dysfunction of a team. The first one, lack of trust.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the first thing I'd like to advise to do is start to build trust within these people. So create some kind of workshop or seminars where we will address this challenge of trust, because the fact that Jack, where is it? I forgot the name, Jack, Jim, and Dale, what they say,
right.
As a board member, like, you know, I give you a secret, but don't repeat it.
Right.
It's scary.
No materials were sent out in advance of the board meetings. There was nothing they would distribute at the board meeting. And the PowerPoint we put up with the financials, as soon as everyone looked, they'd be right back down.
Yeah, not only that, but the fact that they talked to you about their opinion of the CEO, obviously they didn't share that opinion with the person himself.
Correct.
And that's an issue. If we don't have trust,
right.
We can't say what we think. If we are not, if we don't have, let's say, constructive argument or conflict, then we are not going to solve the problems we are facing.
But doesn't that exist in a lot of boards with a relationship with the CEO? I mean, people talk transparency, but if you interview them, the individual board members or the CEO, none of them are being totally transparent a lot of the time, right?
I'm curious as to what the professional board term means. It seems quite loaded. It seems
right.
quite amorphous.
Right.
And my questions were much more around, do these folks really want to change? I mean, I know where they want to get to.
Right.
I got a $500 million bogey, and I got a $25 million EBITDA number.
Mm-hmm.
Am I actually going to listen to you and pay any attention to you? If you look at the previous composition,
right.
they were all family pals that went way back. That
sure.
Probably
the father
rubber stamped,
and
they may not have had the expertise.
Right.
Now they're talking about you're coming in. Hopefully you're going to lend some of this expertise. The question is, do they really want it?
Right.
And I think that you could sit down with the CEO and try to figure out, and they may say, oh, absolutely. You'd have to play it out a little bit to figure out, is this going to actually play out? How? What's the situation? How dysfunctional are they? Are they actually paying attention to some of my thoughts and comments, and are they interested? Or you're going to make some recommendations. They're going to say, that's great, but then nothing happens operationally. You come back in another few months, the same thing happens again. Then you'll know how serious they are about the growth. Excuse me, the growth aspect, and then you'll know what professional means, and it may be window dressing. That's my takeaway.
Plus, you're in a real precarious position because you're the only new guy on the board, right?
Right.
So all of the old cronies are still on the board. So your risk of being effective is certainly, I think, high. And besides that, I think there's a disconnect between what the management of the company says they want and what they really want compared to what Matt is expecting. I think there's just a real gulf there. They say one thing, but I don't think they really appreciate what it means.
So is that something I should have done? I should have tried to find out more about before I even joined?
Sure, why not? Sure, sure.
But even if you had gone through a whole bunch of meetings and interviews, until you're actually there with people, you don't know how real it is. And again, to John's point, you know, when you start talking about the medicine they have to take,
right,
you'll come to find out within 3 to 6 months whether they're actually going to do any of it or not. Or how you know, are they going to take really small bites? Or are they going to start doing the things that you're bringing forward? And you are a pilgrim in an unholy land as a practical matter.
No, it's true. And I got excited because they said, look, we're 275 million. We want to grow up to 500 million. We want to professionalize the board. And they called me up and said, come join.
So the case doesn't say whether or not you had the opportunity to sit down and talk to the three other family members.
Did not.
It also says that Steve's original proposal was to get rid of all of the independent
Correct.
And bring on
clean house.
So I see a question either, first question for Steve is either you want to talk to the other three family members in private, you know, to get feedback, see if it resonates with what the other three independents said, or with Steve, the CEO, to see what, you know, what's going on, because somebody's not in sync with the long-term objective here of whatever, professionalizing the board, bringing in the proper people who would be in the majority. So it you know, kind of seems you need to find out more about what's driving Steve and whether is it the other independent directors or are there issues with family members.
Yeah, they viewed it was going to be too disruptive to wipe out the whole board and say, okay, now bring out four independents for the first time. So we're going to professionalize in stages, basically. Yeah. We'll do one, and maybe a year later we'll look at another.
I mean, you know, like turning out a whole, you know, four independents and bringing in four new people, you have this problem times four, probably,
right.
Because you have four people who say, oh, wait a minute, we didn't get the whole story. Mm-hmm. So I think phasing it would be better, but I think you need to understand the story of what you're dealing with first.
Is this two questions then? Is this a fiduciary board or a...
No, it's a board of directors, not a board of advisors.
So
fiduciary.
Full vote and
correct.
More independents than there are family members at this point.
Right. Well, correct. So when they originally started this board, they decided it should be an odd number, seven, and that they would have four independents. How independent these independents are, it's a whole other thing, but there were four independents.
Yeah, it was the most
CEO's
board. And then one other question that says the goal is 25 million. Half of that today, or is it a company in trouble?
The company is not in trouble. It's not to where it needs to be in terms of that, but it wasn't in trouble.
So in that case, I do this in a second because it's a good opportunity to take what could be a substantially, you know, roughly, basically sound company as a board of directors to work to try to improve it. The fact that it's a board and there are more independents, regardless of how independent they are to start, it seems like you could begin to lay out some pretty significant requirements in that professionalization path, and then let them decide whether they want to pursue that professionalization route or not.
Kind of along those lines of professionalizing it, you start to think about committees.
Yep.
You know, if you have an audit committee, that's going to flush out the financials because now you think you develop a relationship with the auditors. If you have a compensation committee, that's going to make the CEO a bit more accountable, one would think, to the goals of the overall organization. I would think basic structures like that within the board and how you're going to go about that over time. You probably also want to ask about the D&O insurance, which probably didn't change.
Well, the compensation committee existed, but the compensation committee was basically the CEO sitting down with his other family members who were part of the compensation committee, and they had one outside board director on that and saying, this is what I want to be paid for the year. That was the compensation committee. So no studies. Yeah.
A couple of observations. One, I think that the motivation for taking the board seat in the first place as a recently retired CEO, it strikes me that you hadn't really thought so much about your role as an ex-CEO versus a board member. And that really it's not your job to build the company directly. And I think the energy around that got you into the situation
about right.
maybe understanding the separation of roles, or the difference in the roles. But you're there now, so walking away is probably a bad idea unless it's disastrous. And I think that the getting the progression into the, getting more professionals so that you're not the only person there that is truly independent and working out that path with the CEO, the other directors, the family members, as well as putting in some of the, committees and professional controls is probably your best way to navigate successfully and help them get to where they want to go. And you still run the risk in a family business that, their stated motivation and their actual motivation are quite different. And probably figuring out how to sort that out as fast as possible and figure out whether it's navigable or not will save you a lot of time and aggravation.
And one of the things I found out when I joined the board was, which was in June, they had the election, was that in July, the other, quote, independent board members were all going on a fishing trip with the CEO for a week.
So yes, that's when I stepped back. You're right.
You can't make this stuff up.
The modus operandi that sort of like seems to beam at me is that it's like, you can think about it like a Politburo, who's the first secretary. And, are you dealing with Politburo that wants to professionalize, or is it the board?
Right.
And this to me would be important diagnostics up front. And then, again, stepping back, I can't fathom joining the board where you don't get the materials beforehand.
So would you leave? Would you say I should step? I was just elected. Should I walk away and say?
I don't know. We have those discussions beforehand because, I think that the first thing that you need to do is establish, what are the expectations of the other side?
Mm-hmm.
What are your expectations? And, what are the processes in there before you even venture, saying anything yay or nay or maybe. So
a couple observations. I'd like to build on what this gentleman and Ellen were talking about. That, when you have family members, it's really hard to fire other family members. It's blood's thicker than water.
Oh, absolutely.
And that becomes a real issue when you don't know the sort of ownership percentages and all that kind of stuff. You don't know if there's other family members behind that are not in the business.
Well, Phil, I can comment on that. There were 60-something family owners as shareholders, but they had A shares and B shares. So this family who was involved in the business had the controlling A shares.
And then another observation is that, I like what Ellen said, sort of set out a schedule. Say, after quarter one, we'll get a new director. After quarter two, we'll get a third director. Because what I worry about is if you come in and you're the only guy and it's nebulous, like we want to get more professional, you could end up in what I call organ rejection. In other words, you try to be more professional, and then the three family members will gang up with some of their buddies that are on the fishing trip, and they'll sort of bring you down and undermine your effectiveness. So it's really delicate.
And
I'd also try to find out if you could talk to some of the people who are under these family members in terms of some senior management people, in terms of the culture and what the business is like, so that you can really try to understand it better. Because you're getting one story from these family members to really learn how to learn more about the business from non-family members.
Well, I can tell you I wanted to do that, but the CEO didn't want that at all. He's like, there's no chance.
Or
Right after he joined, he had said, I had said, could I go and meet with some of the senior management? He said, well, they'll be presenting at times in the board meeting. That's how you'll meet them. So it was not encouraged at all.
Picking up on this, and going to, now how do you correct this? Because you've already gotten yourself in here, got the due diligence, et cetera. I think you could go back and reset. Tell them, reset that you're coming on board is based on being a reset. Now you go have your conversation with all of us. Why bring somebody else on in this mess, all right? They've got to see that there is a need, and your leverage is, I guess, if you say, that's it, I'm not staying, I think that would not do well in the industry. It would raise a lot of questions. So yes, you have a little leverage, plus everybody's intentions are still good, they're just misguided, from what I understand. But I think before you go much further, none of this quarterly stuff about somebody else coming on board, because if I remember correctly, the non-local aspects, his location, whoever he or she is that's coming on board, was almost as important as having the experience. And you really should be going after the best athlete, in my view. So, I'll ask a comment.
Just an observation that, looking at your credentials and the fact that you spent 45 years working for a family business.
Right.
I'm looking at this going, they did some good things here. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a problem. They're addressing it. I agree with it.
Yep.
And then they find you with these credentials that are better than the guy that's running it now, plus working with the dynamics of a family-run business. Who better than you? So I'm looking at it a little different. I'm looking at them as saying, hey, good job. They found you. Now, no matter what you ask them beforehand, that's all well and good, but you're going to learn once you get in there. And with your experience, you're going to spot things that no one will spot. So I think you're in the driver's seat, and I think you can leverage this background and be effective. And you can't do enough of that up front to figure out. You got to get in there. But I give them credit for finding.
Yes,
Larry. If I were to advise you, I would say, first thing tomorrow morning, I want you to write a resignation letter and leave it undated.
Okay.
And then give it to the CEO and say, this is your copy and I have a copy. The very moment you feel I'm not adding value to this company, I want you to date your copy of my resignation letter, hand it to me, I'm out of here. It also works the other way around. When I feel I'm not providing value and I'm wasting my time, I'm going to date my copy of the letter and give it to you, and I'm out of here. And starting the relationship with that says, I'm serious. You know, I'm not here to play. Second thing I would do is I would go back to Phil's point, which I think is an extremely good point. And that is the value of just waiting it out. As part of the resignation letter, say, I want to meet the family. You know, I can't really understand this business without understanding the family. So if you don't let me talk to the family members and meet the family members and understand the family members, I'm going to date my resignation letter right now. I would do that right now. But getting back to Phil's point, being a little academic, there was a book years ago by Roosevelt Moss Cantor called X's and O's. And this applies in this situation, but also applies for women who join boards. If there's seven people and you're the only one woman on the board, you're probably not going to rock the boat too much. And over time, you probably will take on the values of the but all of a sudden, if there's another woman on the board of seven, or if there's three women, now the dynamics totally change and they support each other. And I think what's going to happen is over time, if you are the chairman of the Nominating and Governance Committee, which you should be because you're an outsider, and then you're going to be the gateway for deciding who's going to be the next board members. And so over a period of a year, you spend the first year just learning the family, learning the business, staying cool, second year, third year, begin to do the culture change of the board, and as chairman of the nominating governance, you're the gateway to make that happen. That's what I would recommend.
So my thought and picking up before is that you're coming in as a former CEO and recognizing the roles, you know, and is that if you are a member of the board, a Matt's a member of the board,
right?
The changes have to come through board mechanisms. You know, in other words, the CEO had a particular behavior because that's what the board allowed them to do. So I think that, you know, rather than trying to get to do the CEO's job, because that's maybe the job you just came from, you got to, if you can, and that might take some time, you have to change the expectations and processes of the board. So to me, that's your point of action to then affect the broader, you know, enterprise.
Larry, we have about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
Why don't you take over and be Larry Siff?
And tell what happened to the end. The person did join the board and did stay on. And actually went into the CEO's office and had a pretty serious conversation. Probably should have done the letter thing you said, but had a very serious conversation and said, look, if I'm going to commit my time to this, this has to be worthwhile for me. And the way this is set up right now, I don't see it being worthwhile. And he said, and he did end up actually taking on chairing the governance nominating committee. He said, the first thing is, if you're talking about professionalizing a board, it can't just be me. I can't be out on an island by myself, so we need a plan. But it wasn't, the second one was coming on, I think, a year later, and then they were going to bring on the next two in the year after that. But he said, you've got to fix some things and address some things up front. And he put down his rules, and one of his rules was, I want board materials, and I want them at least 5 days in advance. That includes financials. I can no longer have this where you put up on a screen and pull it down. I mean, if you want me to be useful to you, that's not useful. And so he started going through a bunch of his own rules that in order for him to be productive, to follow, to make it a much more meaningful thing. The second thing he required is he wanted there to be a strategic business plan, that which there was not. I mean, it's one thing to talk about, I want to take it, I want to double my sales or go from 275 to 500, but he's like, where's the how? So that was a second requirement of his. A third requirement is, he said, I want to meet all the senior management. I think we should have a dinner the night before the next board meeting. You can introduce me and I'll meet them, but then I want to spend some one-on-one. So he put down his own rules. He said, I joined this, I wasn't expecting these things, and maybe he goes, you know, he put it on himself, maybe part of this, I didn't do the right due diligence, I got excited, I knew your company, I knew the executive director who made the introduction, but he said, this board is not, you know, you talk about professionalized, just because you brought me on, the board really isn't professionalized at this point at all. So he stayed on, he stayed committed to it, and they ended up bringing on a second, and they eventually brought on two more board members, so they have four independent board members, and they're actually operating as, and he chairs the governance and nominating committee, which is what you suggest. He actually chairs now the audit committee too. So, and the compensation, all the committees are now chaired by independent directors, which wasn't the case. So comp committee, he suggested we got to do, we need to hire a firm on the outside to really look at comp so we understand comparatives in the industry. So they did, so he was the single guy, I guess, who started it to really professionalize what they were doing. He said, no longer you come in and say, I want X money. That's not the way we're going to do it. We're going to look and see what's going on. And then, so he started, and same with the audit committee and everything else. So he professionalized, in my opinion. He made the difference. And then the other local board members eventually all retired, and the independents were truly independent, didn't go on fishing trips and everything else with the CEO. They kept their independence. They felt that was also very important. And then they set up a laddered system as they bring a new independence going along. So,
How's the business doing?
The business is doing pretty well. It's not at the 500 million mark that they want to be, but it's at about close to 400 now. So this is over a three-year period.
Wow.
So a lot better. But part of that was through an acquisition.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say.
It was not internal.
Were there changes in roles or dynamics or positions of any of the family members?
Or do they all keep doing the same job they were doing?
They're doing the same job, but another thing he got them to do was go to one of the NACD Washington sessions or something, the couple day things. So after year one, he got them to all attend one of those 2-day sessions, and they got to see that they didn't have a clue like what they were doing and how they were operating in a sense. And then the plan at some point is, you know, for succession planning, just in terms, and for the first time they're considering a non-family CEO, which is what he had done for his $1 billion business, which he very much encouraged. You know, he said, let's start with, you know, what are the skill, no different with board, you know, what where do you want the company 3 to 5 years from now? What are the skill sets we need? Do we have those in? So that's what's going on now, just in terms of trying to determine, is it the right CEO for the future? You know, is the CEO? But, you know, of that, when I said the revenue model, $85 million was the revenues of the acquisition they did. So
there's been very little organic growth.
Correct.
Correct. So the CEO,
not much operational change.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just a question of time.
Absolutely.
To be replaced.
Right.
Maybe a slow growth industry too. Without knowing a lot about the industry, you know, sometimes I think people put these numbers out there, and if I'm in a 3 to 5% growth industry, you know, unless I'm paying to buy share or I'm acquiring, I'm gonna have a tough time growing much faster than the market.
Right, and I think that's some of the, and their good news is the balance sheet is very strong. I mean, they were very conservative as a family, even taking out dividends every year. They limited the amount of dividends they pulled out every year because they always believed they should be investing for the business for the future. So there isn't an issue in terms of upside down balance sheet or their highly leveraged or anything else. So I think it will be a good opportunity for some new CEO at some point.
So were they, like, for example, when they did the acquisition,
right,
were there independent members on, were there four independent members on the board at that point who were very active versus just the family kind of?
Yes, there were three of the four had gone on when they did the acquisition. They had the fourth coming on, and they used, you know, they used independent people to come in to make sure to do the proper due diligence. They brought in, they did the acquisition right to make sure doing the due diligence. And then the director, Matt was leading the process there for them. So it wasn't they had an internal team that went and looked at it, but he was really leading the process.
Now, Larry, getting back to this, the real situation.
Yeah.
What was the role of Neptune Advisors in this process?
Well, we came in later. So we came in after they had already brought in the one director, and then the one director ended up bringing us in to go and try to help and advise and bring in objectivity. Because, I mean, we've worked with over 300 boards at this point, and over half of them have been family businesses. So we came in and really advised in terms of process. So they heard it from more than the one director, more than Matt just saying, this is what I want to do.
So you'd be going in as an advisor to the board or an advisor to the CEO?
So I was in, we were an advisor to the board.
Okay.
In this case, so.
Could we discuss this as an aside, since you've been around that many boards, what's best practices for this fishing trip? What are some activities? What's a substitute, I'm serious, what's
yeah.
a substitute for that? That, I mean, you don't want to have a wall between these parties. So
right.
What would be a good best practices for activities that we, if we saw independents versus insiders later on?
My opinion, I mean, it's fine if you're going out golfing or something for X number of hours. It's not fine when you're going away with the CEO for a week or 10 days. Oh. That to me, I mean, it's a matter of what character versus degrees. There's some people who say there should be none. I mean, Sam Walton will tell you there's zero, right? You can, you know. They still, to this day, if you ever go out with any Walmart person, they pay for their own meals. He says, there's no, you can't draw any lines. You can't say it's okay for a $25 meal, but it's not okay for me to take a $300 gift, right? I mean, where do you sort of draw the line? But to me, what I see it is a matter of hours, but a matter of actually, can you really still be truly independent and objective if you, you know, start hanging out with the CEO for this length of time? I think it's extreme.
But one of the best practices is just build some sort of interaction as part of a schedule. So whether it's an annual, you know,
the dinner the night before,
right?
Yeah.
But build the interaction into the, you know, regular cadence of the board meetings.
Or even a retreat, a board retreat.
Board retreat. But that's everyone. That's not some of the people, particular thing. I mean, we did a survey of ourselves of 38 independent directors. And we ask them the question, is your board using you to the best of your ability? 84%, 32 of them, of the 38 said no. But what does that tell you? And when you meet one-on-one with the CEOs and ask them, do you feel like the board is supporting you in the best way or things they could be doing better? You always hear the answer, well, not really, and these are all the things. So there's definitely something there in terms of looking at CEO board relationships and how they can be improved.
Larry, I guess to that point, there's such a disconnect, why is that? But maybe the more important question is, you know, how does that get addressed? Because there's clearly a mismatch.
Right.
And I'm sure that if you expanded the survey, even if you went to hundreds or thousands of people, you would find the exact same thing.
Yeah, my opinion is, it was well said, when we had Arnie Sorensen as our speaker for our Thought Leader Series, he put it pretty well. He goes, you know, my job is not to impress. And a lot of people who sit there as CEOs of companies, he's CEO Marriott, they try to impress the board. My big issue is I gotta tell them, these are the real issues that Marriott faces going forward. These are the challenges we face. But a lot of CEOs, if you meet with them, they're really worried about how they and their senior management team appear before the board. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you get these presentations, and not just the dog and pony, that are so watered down, it wasn't even the original presentation. The senior VP or VP sat down with the CEO and says, oh, I want to present this to the board. Well, I wouldn't tell them that. Tell me how you did it. I wouldn't say that. You know what? Don't say that. So that is part of the issue. You know, can a CEO come and say, these are the two or three main issues we're facing into the board's dome? So we did that as a survey. We said to the CEO, tell us your top three issues, and we did. And then we went out to the board members, said, tell us the top three issues. Not even the same, complete disconnects. Then we went to the senior management, tell us your top three issues. Not the same as the CEO. How is this possible?
Wow.
Let me respond to what you said. I have a different way of looking at this. When you look at a board, there's two issues that have to be balanced. One is advice and counsel, and the other is audit and oversight.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when you're dealing with a startup company like yours, the board is almost all advice and counsel and not audit and oversight. Then when you move to a larger public company like a Marriott, it's almost all audit and oversight and very little advice and counsel. I worked with a CEO of a board who I think was extremely smart about board dynamics, and what he said was, the culture of this board is by default audit and oversight. But at times I'm going to ask you to put your audit and oversight hats off and put your advice and counsel hat on.
Mm-hmm.
And you agree you will do that. And then I will use you for advice and counsel and be willing just to bounce ideas off that are not clearly thought through. And they said, that's great. We'd love you to do that, because that's right. Our default as a board is advice and counsel. And we're here to review your performance. But if you ask us to take that hat off, we'll be glad to take it off. And I found that really worked extremely well.
Does it really?
It did.
As soon as you hear something in the advice and counsel part that's going a little sideways, that brings a concern into the oversight and governance side, how do you separate?
I find, again, it's the idea of using a metaphor, and the metaphor is your hat. that the metaphor is, by the default is you're wearing your audit and oversight hat on, but if I ask you to, can you take that hat off and put advice and counsel? Most board members will be happy to do that. But using the metaphor issue helps make it okay.
But I'm convinced, so let me give you an example, a public board, okay?
Yeah.
CEO of a public board sends the board materials out the day before they arrive to the board members, okay? And in the page, in the X hundred pages, was 80-something pages on raw material costs. Now, I'm not saying raw material costs weren't important, but they got 80-something pages of that. And the board members, we were advising the board. We went and interviewed each of the board members, and we interviewed the CEO, and to find out why, you know, what's going on here. Why are they not getting this in advance or not? But he basically came down to, he wanted to divert their attention. Let them spend time on all the raw materials, because then they're not dealing with the real issues going on in our business. That's a problem, right?
That's a
major publicly held company, $X billion publicly held company. So then we suggest, when we went to the board members and we're like, what do you do? So first of all, no one can read these huge books that come a day before. We should have gone beforehand. We said, okay, but put that aside. What do you do with all this raw material stuff? And they're like flipping through and says, I'm like looking through. One of them's trying to yellow out and things. So we suggested it get presented in a, we said, what's the point behind the whole point was the raw materials and the relationship, the profitability, you looked over time here. So we were basically able to summarize in about 4 or 5 pages what was 80 something pages of raw materials, which the board really appreciated. The CEO, not so much. He's like, I like the old format. Of course he liked the old format, because then they weren't getting into the real issues, right? And we see it all the time. We were part of a presentation. A senior VP of marketing and sales gets up, does a presentation, talks about all these share opportunities for shares overseas, and this is a market share we can gain, does it by country and everything. He sits back down, and afterwards I'm talking to one of them. I said, where did that come from? I mean, there's no way you're going to get them. If you go after the market share in these countries, it was like there were no competitors existing, right? So they're going to get it and maintain their margins at the same time. Right, sure. The competitors are just going to lie down and say, take our share. The competitors are going to come aggressive price. He goes, yeah, no. He said, no, that's right. I said, but you didn't say that to the board. Well, I was going to, but when I met with our CEO, he said, don't say that. No, don't say that. Don't say we're going to get hit on the margin end. But that's the reality. So to me, what the board gets presented, as much as everyone talks transparency, isn't so transparent.
And back to this case for a second, the company was actually lucky that they did a reasonably good job in recruiting that first person.
Right.
Had it been less experience or...
Absolutely.
It could have been a disaster.
And he also was someone who was well established, had run his $1 billion company, and he just, he's like, I can lead this. And even when we got involved, he's like, I don't need this. I can lead this at any point. I'm either going to lend value and get this to the next level, or I'm walking out. So he never needed it, which also was good. So it wasn't like he was dependent. He was like, I'll get him plenty of other boards, and I have other opportunities. So
we're going to have to, we'll take one more question, then we'll stop.
I'm just going to comment in the asset management business, what I've board I'm on, very regulated, and there's a lot of data that you get.
Right.
So, and I've been on 3 different boards, so this is a combination of things that were done on different, but we specify that everything we get, an executive summary,
mm-hmm.
says, you have 90 pages of data, but here's, what's key, what's important. Are we asking you to vote on something today, or is this just informational? Are we asking for advice, or are
right.
we letting you know, kind of, and if it's a big decision, it's 2 bites at the apple. It's always over 2 board meetings, unless it's some real emergency, and usually you don't have something like that. But, so you're not getting something, and we get our materials 10 days before, we have 5 days to look at them, and then we have a call of all the independent directors where everybody says what's their 3 hot buttons, and the next 5 days, anything that people want more information on, the management company has 5 more days to bring in the information, so we don't get bogged down in I don't have what I need to give advice or to vote or to make a decision. And those type of, you know, good practice, I won't say best, but good practices, I think, are very helpful to establishing trust and cooperation and moving things along, because then nobody feels like they're getting something.
Railroaded
at them.
No, that's great.
Thank you very much, Larry.
No, thank you.
For those of you who want to leave, please feel free to leave. Those of you who want to continue to stay and talk with Larry, please feel free to do so. Thank you for coming. We will have a program on the theme of family businesses next month. Janice DiPietro is going to be presenting a case. She is with a firm that does work with family businesses and also women-led businesses. So thank you very much for coming. Hope to see you again.
Thank you.